It was a protest gone bad. 2 weeks ago, 8 first and second year students occupied the vice president's office at Trent University in Peterborough, Ontario. At first, it seemed like a slumber party. For 3 days, they sang, were entertained by concerts outside, talked to the media, and tried to negotiate with the university's president from within their barricades. But in the middle of their third night there, the party was suddenly over. Niecy Simmons was one of the protesters. She's at home in Peterborough, Ontario.
Ms. Simmons, why were you occupying the vice president's office?
Well, for the last 2 years, students, staff, faculty, and community members have been trying to get involved in the decision-making processes at Trent. Because of cuts to education and because of basically the administration's unwillingness to listen, there's been a crisis at Trent, and the university community is divided, and people have just been trying to get involved through the channels that they've been using for the last 30 years at Trent, and all of a sudden these channels aren't working anymore.
Why is there a crisis?
Because for the last 2 years, the Board of Governors and the administrations have made decisions, and the Senate, the students, the Trent Central Students Association disagree with how decisions are happening. And, you know, normally these people would be involved in the decision-making, but they're not.
But you don't have a voice in the Senate?
The Senate was overruled by the Board of Governors. Normally, the Senate is responsible for academic issues, and
yes,
the Board of Governors is responsible for financial issues. And over the last 30 years of Trent, both decisions made by these two governing bodies were respected. But in the closure of the downtown colleges, the administration decided that they needed to close these for financial reasons. The Senate decided that this was an academic issue, a space issue, and they said they voted against closing the colleges.
You don't think that's a financial issue?
Well, I think it's both.
Okay. So you're occupying the president's office.
Yes.
And you're asked to leave, you refuse, the police come in. What happened there?
Well, we talked to Patterson a few times. And
Patterson is the president?
Patterson is the president. And she said, well, we think your demands are not negotiable. I don't think that decision-making should be in the hands of a few students. And we said, well, our demands are about process. You know, we want to get involved and we want to restore the legitimate sort of decision-making processes that have been happening at the university. And she said, well, no, your demands are not negotiable. And basically, after meeting with us twice for 10 minutes, the police came in.
She called in the police?
Yes.
And how did they come in?
Well, we had set up a police liaison, and we had been talking to Sergeant McMullen since 3:30 on the Wednesday evening. Now, we had 4 subsequent phone calls with her, and the last one was at 2:30 in the morning, and she said basically like she'd really like us to leave, and that, you know, if we did now, it would be done peacefully. There would not be any police officers there. We would still get arrested and possibly be charged, but, you know, we wouldn't be forced out. And we said, well, right now we think our demands are negotiable. And so she said, well, you know, we'll talk to the administration. We're not really considering coming in as an option right now, and we'll call you at 7 o'clock in the morning.
She didn't say, here's the or else, you leave now or else?
No, there was no or else.
She didn't say what they would do if you didn't leave?
They said they could come in at any time. They made it very clear that our actions were illegal, and we understood that. So half an hour later, everyone had gone to bed, and I was on security, and the police broke in.
How did they come in?
Well, I heard running down the hallway, and I saw police on the outside. So I went and woke everyone up, and we had a system where we were going to lock ourselves down together with chains. And as the last person was locking down, without any warning, all of a sudden, a police officer smashed in one of the windows. And 25 police officers with riot gear came in and arrested us.
And what, dragged you off to jail?
Pretty much.
Were you offered bail?
Yes. We were offered some bail conditions, but we didn't sign them.
What were the bail conditions?
Bail conditions were that we could not associate with each other altogether.
Okay.
That we could not go on Trent University property except for classes and labs. So that means we couldn't use computer rooms, we couldn't use all sorts of other facilities. We'd have to make appointments to go to the library.
And were any of you armed? Any of you armed?
No, we were not armed. We made it very clear from the beginning that,
yeah,
this was a nonviolent protest. When we went in, first there were people who were explaining to the staff members, like, this is a nonviolent protest. We're here to escort you out safely so that you don't get intimidated by all these students that are coming in. We are concerned about your safety. We made it clear that You know, this, it was very clear that it was a nonviolent protest. And also, Trent has a history of dissent and protest. There have been four other occupations in the history of Trent, and in all of those, the administration actually paid for the students' food, you know. So there's been this sort of acceptance of resistance and dissent and sort of a dialogue that has ensued because of that. And so this is a very unusual sort of move on the part of the administration.
You were strip searched, too.
Yes.
Were you in jail, all of you?
Yes, we were all strip searched.
By female officers?
Yep.
Yeah. And what did they say about that?
They said that they only do strip searches when people are being suspected of having weapons. So they obviously had been led to believe that we were carrying weapons or that we were violent when we were not.
How long were you in jail?
We were in jail for about 15 hours.
And then what happened?
Well, our lawyer was negotiating the bail conditions with the Crown.
Yeah.
And she managed to get those changed. And we signed those conditions and we were released at about 5 p.m. that the next evening.
And charged?
The charge is criminal mischief.
What's the penalty for that?
Well, possibility of a year in prison or a fine or community service.
But you don't expect to go to jail for that?
Well, considering how enraged the community and the staff and the faculty were that we were in jail for 12 hours, I don't think they would allow us to go for jail for a year, no.
The university community has rallied around you now, I gather.
Yes. A lot of people who are on the fence have come on side just because of the sort of brute force that the administration used to expel us. The faculty council had an emergency meeting on Monday, and there were three motions, and they were all passed. And the first one was that they deplored and condemned the actions of the administration in their use of force against us. The other one had to do with restoring civility to the university. And another one had to do with asking the president to write a letter to drop the charges to the Crown.
Do you think this has advanced your original goals at all?
Well, our goals were to make people aware of how the administration was not listening to students, and I think this has pointed to people that the administration is unwilling to listen. So in that respect, yes.
They could say, we listened, but we disagree.
Well, yes, and that's what they've been doing for the last 2 years. So, there are a lot of people who have a lot of things to contribute to this university, who are concerned about the academic and financial sort of aspects of this university, who are very invested in the institution, and they have been ignored. So it's not that people are just emotionally attached to the colleges or don't really like corporatization. You know, it's people who have a lot to say about this.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Niecy Simmons was one of the protesters barricaded in Trent's administrative offices for 3 days. Rob Hodston is a sergeant with the Peterborough Lakefield Community Police, which removed the students from those offices. He's also in Peterborough.
Sergeant Hodston, who
Yes.
made the decision to storm the office occupied by the students?
We were asked to become involved by the Trent University administration. And once we had been asked to become involved, we had to put a plan into effect on how we were going to deal with what was going on at the university.
Well, what did the university administration ask you to do?
They just asked us to do what we could to ensure that they could get back in and use it.
So remove the students?
Exactly.
And you asked them to leave?
We did. We attempted to contact them initially on February the 28th, but they had the telephone shut off. Later that day, we dropped a note off to them informing them that we would like to speak with them. We gave them a telephone number and the name of a contact person, and they subsequently contacted us at 3 p.m., and we talked to them off and on for the next 12 hours.
But in the end, you decided to smash through the window with policemen, 23 of them?
25.
25?
In total is what we had.
Dressed in riot gear?
Riot gear. We had four of our people with shields and masks. That was due to the fact that if they had to break glass, obviously we didn't want the glass to come in on our people. Also, we knew that the doors had been chained shut, and that they that there had been desks and chairs and whatnot piled in front. So we wanted to ensure that when we went in, that the people that we were sending in were going to be safe. So that's why we gave them that those things to use.
You didn't think these women were armed and dangerous?
No reason to think so, but it's far better to have the equipment and not need it than need it and not have it.
Now tell us about the strip searching.
They were strip searched. We have a process in place here that if you are to be detained in our cells for any length of time, you are strip searched to ensure that you have nothing on your person with which you may harm yourself or harm someone else. Usually we don't detain people for any length of time, so we don't strip search. But in this case, because the protesters were in our were being processed from about 5 a.m. on and had decided not to abide by the terms that we had requested, and we knew that they were going to court, and the court process itself would probably not start till 10 or 10:30, meaning that they would be in our cells for 5 hours. The decision was made to search them in that manner.
So this is policy now? I mean, if somebody gets picked up for not paying, you know, a speeding ticket or something, you strip search them?
We don't strip search them, no. We have a process in place, and this process has been in place for at least 6 years, and it was because to ensure that we don't do this type of a search on a random, ad hoc basis.
Well, I'm a little confused here. If somebody's going to spend a day in jail, they automatically get strip searched.
Yep, they are going to be held in our cells for any length of time.
Yes.
The officer in charge determines, based on the length of time that they may be held, whether or not they should be strip searched.
So it doesn't have to be a very long, a big length of time.
Well,
is it written down how long?
No, well, it's not. But anything more than, I mean, certainly 5 hours to us is a lengthy period of time.
But that's why I'm back to asking. I mean, if you have a warrant for somebody because they didn't pay a traffic ticket,
okay,
you're going to put them in jail. They might be there for 24 hours.
That's correct.
They're going to be strip searched.
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
That's correct.
How long has that policy been in place?
Our policy has been in place at least 5 years.
Do you think that this action, the whole thing, was in any way excessive for you? Content about the way it was carried out?
No, I think that, I mean, we had a plan in place. Obviously, we didn't want to force our way in, and we attempted to basically talk them out. After 12 hours, the feeling was that that was not going to be the case, and the decision was made to go in. Based on what I know and what I've seen, I don't think there was any undue force use whatsoever. The only person who was hurt was one of our people who went in and had a filing cabinet fall on him.
Had you ever been called in by the university before in a situation like this?
This is the first time that I know of.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Ms. Finley.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sergeant Rob Hodson is with the Peterborough Lakefield Community Police. Bonnie Patterson is the president of Trent University. We reached her in Ottawa.
Professor Patterson, what do you think now about the actions you took in calling in the police?
Well, the university does have multiple responsibilities, and clearly when you involve the police, you know that there are going to be individuals that disagree with that as an approach. Our responsibilities, of course, are far beyond that which represents being a community of scholars and a place for learning. We often work in a theoretical culture in our environments, but we are also workplaces. And it is important that we create respectful environments and ones that are safe and free of harassment and intimidation. And in this particular case, we had to weigh the pros and cons of a situation that had crossed a particular line into a world of illegal activity.
You know, student sit-ins are not terribly uncommon and not known to be dangerous, I don't think.
Well, sit-ins and protests are pretty common in university environments,
yeah,
and have been historically. And of course, civil disobedience gets expressed in many different ways. The situation was a little more complex than that, and we had not only some concerns around the safety of the students inside, but we had concerns around the sanitary and hygiene issues that a place without running water and washrooms carries with it over a number of days. We had a series of demands that had been identified by the students that were very complex in terms of the nature of them. Some were relevant specifically to Trent, and others were very complex and of interest to all universities in the country, such as privatization and corporatization, and those issues can't be settled through a glass window.
No, but you couldn't have just let them wait until they were ready to come out?
Well, the question from our point of view was the other safety issues that existed there.
Mm-hmm.
We have staff in the area. We had confidential and personnel files that were exposed. We had clearly hygiene issues that were building up day over day. We spent 2 days talking with students, trying to get them to come out and or to allow us to go in and obtain files and allow some workflow to continue. Certainly, if it had been the typical kind of protest sit-in, the students could have stayed as long as they wanted.
Do you think that the police, the way they acted, was proper or excessive?
Well, when any organization or a group of citizens involves the police, quite frankly, you trust that they will assess the situation and use their professional judgment in how they proceed. We certainly had conversations about the importance of continual negotiation, and so the 12 hours of interaction that the police undertook prior to taking any entrance to the facility was indeed their judgment.
But look, I mean, you must be the most unpopular person on campus now. The whole university, all of the faculty have rallied behind the students and condemned your action and the police action.
Well, in actual fact,
you have no second thoughts about any of this?
Of course. This was one of the most difficult decisions I've ever made, I can tell you, as an administrator. And I think it is unfair to say there's an entire rally of everyone behind this. Quite frankly, I get many, many calls saying that there's a line that's been crossed, and it's important that the university, both from the point of view of its employee base and from the point of view of other students, they believe that this one went too far. We had 90 faculty that joined us out of 300 in the faculty council discussion. It certainly wasn't unanimous, but there was a very strong and overwhelming vote to support amnesty for the students and to not take this type of action on campus. But there is a varying opinion around it. But everybody agrees that it is incredibly important that we use a civil and mutually respectful approach to moving forward from this particular incident.
Well, what have you decided about asking the charges be dropped?
Well, we are under some. We will enter some discussions. I'm back in the community tomorrow, and I certainly need to meet with the administrative group that are there. We are listening to all viewpoints, and there are many viewpoints on this, and we are looking at every consideration. The charges themselves are not in our hands. Charges are laid by the authorities.
You could ask to have them dropped, however,
we
and
can
they would not proceed, probably.
We can interact in discussions, which you have in the past with students,
uh-huh,
when students have found themselves in a difficulty, and that is certainly what we will weigh in looking at all the evidence that we have in this case. But I can tell you that the feelings of our university staff, who did feel intimidated by the students and how they carried out what they've described as a peaceful protest, we also must take into consideration. I will never condone an activity that's illegal and has the potential for jeopardizing safety and security of staff and students. And as an employer, we have an obligation to ensure we have a safe workplace that's free from intimidation and harassment and other types of activities.
You know, former administrations have not found it necessary to crash in with riot gear and have their students strip searched to end a demonstration or a sit-in.
administrations, of course, don't. Police make their decision about how they approach those decisions.
They didn't call in the police, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, there are incidents, actually, in this province and across the country where police have been involved in removing of students, and the circumstances vary from case to case. I think the severity of the blockage and the approach with chains through suspended ceilings and sort of rigging things up to fall if doors were touched, that was a kind of new approach to this particular protest, and quite frankly, it was not a typical one.
And the demands that gave rise to this whole protest, that the university community be not only consulted, but that their ideas be listened to in the decision-making on campus?
Well, that's very important. I mean, our administration believes very strongly in the future of of Trent. Regrettably, we face very significant financial challenges. Mm-hmm. One of the demands was to reverse a decision taken by the administration and our board to relocate two town colleges over the next 7 years. And clearly, there are people on our campus that disagree with that decision, but it is a financially driven decision. The other issues are ones that are issues of broad community involvement in the dialogue, and that dialogue isn't going to be solved quickly. When you look at issues of privatization and commercialization, when you look at the presence of ads on campus, we can have these discussions. Let's get students together, not just the 8 that had locked themselves in and the 17 or so that were outside, arm-chained around the doors.
Those discussions,
they must carry on.
Professor Patterson, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mary Lou.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bonnie Patterson is the president of Trent University. You're listening to As It Happens on CBC Radio 1. We're heard across the United States on Member Nations of Public Radio International and around the world on shortwave on Radio Canada International. Our website is cbc.ca as it happens. If you have a comment about anything you hear on the show, you can email us at aih@toronto.cbc.ca, or you can call TalkBack. The number is 416-205-3331. You can also send mail to As It Happens, P.O. Box 500, Station A, Toronto, Ontario, M5W1E6.